You can't replace part of the brain. Like, you
treat them the same.
The source of truth for the medtech industry.
Coexists with the
robot. Robot understands things automatically.
Number one show in the medtech industry.
So Stryker got ahead of that and changed it. In the 90s, built a $1 billion company. It helped up high. A lot of things.
State of medtech.
With your host, Omar M. Khatib.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Excited for another President's Club episode. We took a little bit of a break and in our search of finding great President's Club candidates, this one is one I'm particularly excited about, mainly because it's capital equipment. I always love capital just because it's so sophisticated, so complicated in terms of deals. And so finding a great President's Club candidate for this is not easy. And so our guest today is RJ Schick, who is who does robotics sales over at Procept Biorobotics. I know many of you know about Procept. Let me give you a little bit of background on Procept and their results in the past year before I tell you a little bit about RJ's. Procept Biorobotics is a surgical robotics company that is publicly traded. They're focused on advancing patient care by developing transformative solutions in urology. And they sell a product called the AquaBeam Robotic System, an advanced image-guided surgical robotic system for use in minimally invasive urologic surgery with an initial focus on treating benign prostate hyperplasia or BPH. So essentially, they have this robotic platform that uses water for ablation, which is really important just because it's tissue-sparing. It's not as intense as, let's say, using heat ablation or other methods, okay? And in terms of their growth, they've been just on a tear lately. So these are their fourth quarter and full year 2023 results. So total revenue, they did about $43.6 million in the fourth quarter of 2023, which is an increase of 83% compared to the year prior. U.S. system and rental revenue of $16.6 million for the fourth quarter, 59% increase compared to the year prior. And, you know, the list kind of goes on. So long story short, Procept is doing a phenomenal job of growing their install base and driving utilization. So let me tell you a little bit about RJ. So RJ, he's got a fantastic background. His first real robotics company was that he started over at Mako from 09 to 2013, which is those building years right before Mako got acquired. From there, he was over at Brain Lab as a director of sales, Smith & Nephew. And then finally, for the last 2 years, he's been at Procept. So at Procept, his accolades are 2023 Robotics Sales Rep of the Year, which is their President's Club. In 2023, he finished 476% to plan. He finished number one in sales revenue. In 2023 Q4, he was a Robotics Sales Rep of the Quarter. Q3, he was the Robotics Sales Rep of the Quarter and MVP of the Quarter. And then took over the Greenfield territory and placed 15 systems in just 20 months. Okay. And if you're in robotic sales or any kind of capital sales, to place 15 of anything in 20 months. So he's pretty much placing almost a system every, like, what, 35 to 40 days. That's amazing. So in this episode, we cover his approach to sales, how he became this successful. You're going to definitely want to take notes on this one. And before we jump into it, quick shout out to our sponsor, Clary. Clary has been a longtime sponsor of mine. I love them, and more so, I love their product and technology. Clary is essentially a revenue intelligence platform that plugs into your Salesforce CRM. So if you use Salesforce, one of the problems that we always hear is reps hate using it because, you know, it doesn't help them sell, takes time to put in the data. And a lot of times when they put the data into Salesforce, it's not a day late. It's usually weekly because they wait till the end of the week to enter that data. So there's always going to be some parity between what's actually happening versus what goes in. Clary does is a couple of amazing things. One is that it automates the data going in. So your reps love it because it plugs into their email, among other things, automates all the data that you want to go into there. So you have clean, on time, precise data. And the other side of it is that they help you make revenue a collaborative effort. So usually revenue is a thing that sales teams focus on. With Clary built into and plugged into your Salesforce, they make running revenue a collaborative team sport that you govern. So it's marketing, it's sales, it's customer success, and they help you identify using AI which deals in your pipeline need to be focused on, what revenue you can predict coming out quarters ahead, and more. I love their solution. And so to learn more about Clary, go to clary.com. That's clary.com to learn more. Plus, they just released a new report, a really fascinating one on sellers in the medical device space. Check the show notes below to see that report. And finally, if you're looking for early adopters, I'll tell you, it's really tough to find them. Sometimes you need a database. The problem with databases is that they're really clunky. They're tough to use. It's not something that you can adopt and give to a seller, right? The other side is that they cost a lot of money, you know, because, but at the end of the day, you need these databases because you need to see the procedure volume, prescriptive behaviors, et cetera, so that you know who to target. That's why I've teamed up with Alpha Sophia. Alpha Sophia is a sales intelligence platform that gives you those insights. So I can look at a state, let's say Texas, and filter to see who has done the most surgical cases based on CPT codes, who's prescribed the most medications in a certain area, what societies they're part of. Plus, Alpha Sophia grabs other items that are really important for me and my business, such as contact information, what social media handles does the physician use, and more. This is why for my own clients that I help with their commercial traction and strategy, I use Alpha Sophia. So if you want to learn more about Alpha Sophia and get three free reports, that's three free searches, go to alphasophia.com. That's alphasophia.com/Omar and you know, check it out and get those reports. You don't have to be a director of sales or VP. You can be even a rep and go check out their technology. So that being said, let's get on to our episode with RJ. Enjoy.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show and another wonderful episode of our Presence Club series. It's one of our most popular series. And so today I'm excited to have somebody who's not only a, you know, Presence Club winner and like specifically recommended by his chief commercial officer, but somebody who also is a capital rep. And as you guys know, my background is very heavy in capital, not just that, but in robotics. And so today we have RJ Schick joining us, who's a robotics sales rep over at Procept Biorobotics. So RJ, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Before we kind of talk shop, and especially, you know, winning any awards in capital is really tough. I always tell people that capital is not for the faint of heart. It's like really, it's really tough. People want to get into it because they're like, man, it's like very prestigious. And obviously there's good money involved and everything, but it is a hard job, you know, real hard. But maybe before we jump into it, give us a little intro for those who don't know, what is / who is Procept Biorobotics?
Yeah, Procept Biorobotics, we were founded, I think, back in 2007. And for 10 years, we were basically a research and development company developing pretty much an autonomous robot that can use the pressure of water to resect prostate tissue for a condition of BPH. And so I came into the company about 2 years ago, roughly almost. So we have a computer-assisted, robot-assisted, autonomous robot that allows the surgeon to precisely remove prostate tissue based on the patient's, you know, anatomy, based on their desired outcome, based on the size and shape of their prostate, because all of that is individualized per patient. And so it's really a customized resection that gives almost permanent symptom relief, but also preserve sexual function. And there's no technology, if you look at the TURP, which has been the gold standard for 100 years in the industry, and that's still the gold standard today, that technology is really good at providing symptom relief. But when the surgeon looks the patient in the eye and says, you know, or the patient asks, can you preserve my sexual function? The surgeon's answer is gonna be, well, 80% of the time, no. So there's a huge trade-off that a man needs to make between being able to go to the bathroom normally and preserving sexual function. And so there's been this huge unmet clinical need in the marketplace, and Procept and Aquablation have filled that void.
Got it. That's good to know. And, you know, the prostate and BPH market has really grown quite a lot. You know, probably the one of the bigger examples of it is, you know, Axonics just got acquired by Boston Scientific. Axonics is a neuromodulation company, but they specifically focus on the sort of urinary and bowel dysfunction. And so BPH has really grown quite a lot, you know, not just in terms of the treatment, but also, you know, the diagnosis of it and everything. So have you, you know, you've been with the company for a few years now. Do you feel like the BPH market is starting to grow? And you're starting to see more consumer interest?
Oh, massively. I mean, I think our numbers are like 47.7% growth. You know, if you compare that to like high intensity focus ultrasound at 10%, or, you know, water vapor, you know, ablation at around 13%, we're growing significantly. And, you know, just in the United States alone, there's 40 million men that have BPH. But only 1% of those men elect to have surgery every year because men don't want to make that trade-off. So men are out there looking for ways to get the symptom relief they want without having to trade off their sexual function. And so that market is growing significantly. Even the non-resective market is growing. You know, that And that's more of a temporary relief kind of situation. But yeah, it's growing significantly. I mean, I've been in capital for a very long time. I'm probably one of the worst capital market economies I've ever been in my entire career. And hospitals are still finding a way to buy this technology because it's so impactful for the patients.
Yeah. And if we look at it, you know, the CAGR for, I guess, for the BPH market is somewhere between like 7 and 8%, which is really good. And so, supposedly, depending on the reports that you look at, you know, it's one of the fastest growing segments in medical devices, which is exciting. So, which is great for a capital salesperson. The last thing you want to do in capital sales is be in a market that's not growing. And of course, that's not exciting. So that kind of leads me to your year. So again, you know, I reached out to your chief commercial officer, Sham, who, you know, you guys just had your national sales meeting. You had a lot of, you know, a lot of winners for Presence Club and everything. So I was like, you know, who's somebody you can recommend? And you're the one who came up, one of the people who came up first. So first of all, was this, you know, tell me about the awards that you won and what did that feel like, I guess, getting your name called up on stage?
Yeah, it's a very humbling experience. It's interesting because when I started the year, I was very bullish. And I, in my speech, I talked about this, you know, how at the beginning of the year of 2023, I was very bullish on my market, even though there was significant financial headwinds. I mean, hospitals are losing hundreds of millions of dollars and even billions of dollars in my market. We were impacted by COVID and then the shutdown and people not seeking treatment substantially more than other areas of the country. And so, but I was bullish, had a lot of good opportunities in my funnel. And then it turned out to be at the end of Q1, I closed two deals. And then in April and May, I looked at what was happening and how my deals were going. And I fell into a dark hole. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, this year's not going to be what I think it's going to be. I got to figure this out.
2023.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so I really had to really focus and change what I was doing to impact that year. And I would say that, 6 out of the 11 programs that I created last year happened in the last half of the year and were discovered the last half of the year.
Wow. Well, so that's interesting to hear because usually, you know, H2 for capital sales is always, it's, you know, usually you do close more deals around that time because it's, you know, you've been working deals, but usually it's tough, right? Yeah. And so especially if you're, you know, I feel like capital sales, it's such a psychological game, right? You know, you know, and so for you, you essentially had a sort of bare pipeline from what you're saying in Q2, right? And so you said you had to change some things around, correct?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like bare, but it wasn't as bullish as I thought it was going to be because the deals that I were working, the capital market, there was every account was on a capital freeze or emergency capital only or make, break, fix capital. And the metrics to get those approved are significantly higher as far as the return they need. And then you have to convince an executive leadership team to make a commitment to this. And if they make a mistake, they could be fired given the environment we're in. So they're almost incentivized not to do something, to take a risk, because if they do take a risk and it doesn't pan out, they put their job on the line. So you have all those dynamics that you have to work within, and it's very difficult. You're dealing with a lot of different emotions and things.
So when you saw that, you know, sometimes in capital, people get too romantic about their deals. And the most important thing you got to recognize is like, do I in fact have a deal or not? You were very quick and objective and unemotional, it sounds, to say, I don't have deals here. So knowing that, what next steps, what actions did you take?
I said this in my speech, I bought a pair of scrubs, which I don't never wear, always in a sport coat and a tie. Put on some scrubs. I drove to remote areas of my territory. I handed out clinical literature, invited people, and really drove people to our peer-to-peer events in our hands-on labs. And I just focused in those areas that were smaller markets that were more hungry than the bigger markets. And that kind of resonated. When I started here, I had to do the same thing in 2022. I had my first, in my territory, there was no robots installed whatsoever in my entire region. So I had to start from ground zero. And the first program I put in was in Helena, Montana. The second one I put in was in Idaho Falls, Idaho. And then the third one I put in was in Spokane. That was back in 2022. So those markets weren't as impacted and didn't have as much financial constraints. but the hospitals were smaller. They were hungry for business. Their patients were leaving their markets and going somewhere else. And so, you know, as a capital rep, you got to understand your market dynamics and where patients are going and who's hungry and who's not, who's a turtle, who's a shark. You know, there's a lot of turtles out there. They put their flippers in and they get in their little shell and they don't want to do anything. But then you have people that are sharks that, you know, when everybody's selling, people are buying, right? Blood on the streets. That's when you can make the biggest impact and drive a market. So you're looking for those types of executive leaderships that think that way.
How do you go about discovering them? Because I think, you know, one of the things that is difficult is allocating your time, right? So for you, you physically put on scrubs and started like traveling everywhere, right? Which is a risk because you can end up spending a lot of time going to certain accounts and markets and you realize it was a waste of time. So before you started traveling, how did you go about deciding which accounts and markets you go to? And by the way, just real quick, what's your territory roughly?
Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana.
Yeah, so those are, you got a lot of land to cover. How did you? Yeah, so what was the preparation and planning phase like? What did that look like? What was your framework and thought process before you decide to, like, you know, because other things you have to justify to your leadership, like, hey, this is where I'm spending my time, right? So what did that process look like?
I really divided my market into, so, you know, you have the Seattle and the Portland market, right? Those are the big markets everybody wants to go after. Okay. Well, those are the markets too that are struggling the most financially. So I really divided out my markets like Eastern Washington, Central Washington, you know, and really kind of focused on the data that was out there. Like, how many procedures were they doing? Where were they losing their procedures to? And really analyzed each individual market. So when I went in there and I went to talk to a surgeon, a single surgeon, it's like, well, the hospital's never going to buy anything for me. They haven't bought me a laser in 4 years. I'm like, yeah, but a laser doesn't make a lot of money for the hospital. You know, our program can drive patients and it's very rewarding program. It drives efficiency in the hospital. It helps you to be more efficient. Patients get a better outcome. If we can tell that story and you're there to support me in that, we can get this done if you guys are hungry and looking for business. And most of the time, those smaller hospitals are very hungry and looking for business. I did the same thing. I introduced basically Mako into the western half of the United States long, long ago. And the first system I sold that way back when was to a critical access hospital in the Tri-Cities, long before Swedish Orthopedic Institute or any of these major healthcare systems bought the Mako robot, a small critical access hospital did. And I think three of my 14 robots I've sold to date have been to critical access facilities, hospitals that are hungry for business, that want to keep patients local and not have them go to these bigger centers. And so you really have to kind of identify what your market is and what the dynamics are before you just start driving around and throwing your cart around. You have to have a purpose to what you're doing.
Got it. What role did, I guess, did, you know, did the internet play, I guess? Did you use social media? Did you use data sets? Like, how did, you know, what kind of things did you look to sort of read through to inform those next actions for you?
Yeah. So I'm not a big social media person, so I'm kind of old school. So I didn't use a lot of social media, but obviously Google searches, finding out who the surgeons were, where they were operating at, if they were employed, if they're independent, and that makes a big deal in the capital market. And then we have this Tableau data. It was really, yeah.
Employed, by the way, just I'm wondering, because everybody has different ways, but how do you find out?
Oh, ask them, or you can just tell by their clinic, their website. You can usually tell if they're employed or not just by their website. If they're employed, they're part of Providence or, you know, the IDN they belong to. If they're not employed, they have their own name, like Northwest Urology or something. That's pretty easy to figure out, not all the time, and especially when their email addresses are normal, like Gmail or Yahoo emails. But I always ask just to make sure, you know, are you employed? Are you independent? Because if they're employed, then it's a different deal. It's a different sales process, 100%.
So how do you guys go? And again, ProSep is a bigger company and you guys are publicly traded. So you have access to a little bit more tools than the average startup. But in terms of like getting email addresses for you guys, do you Zoom info? Do you, you know, kind of scour the internet and find the email addresses? How do you go about doing that yourself as a capital rep?
Well, that's a very difficult one. One would think we'd have access to all that stuff, but we don't necessarily have that. You have to be just crafty. And there was a list floating around where there's email addresses, but it's pretty much, you know, you go into the account or you place a call into the account. hey, you know, I'm RJ with Procept Aquablation. I'm looking to build a robotic BPH, you know, center of excellence in your community. I've been working with so-and-so hospital. You know, who's the person in charge of setting up meetings here with the surgeons in your practice? And it's Sally. Okay, great. Can I have Sally's email address? And then I work with Sally to help get me scheduled on their calendars, or I can get the email addresses from them. There's just multiple ways that you can do that. And I'm kind of very respectful of that. Like I know some people will go on Ben Verified and find their cell phone numbers and start texting the surgeons and stuff like that without their permission. I don't go that route. When I meet them, I get their cell phone numbers and I have conversations with them, but, there's just different ways that you can go about it. It's, you just gotta be crafty. You gotta be the rat in the maze trying to find the cheese.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I think at the end of the day, like to be a great capital rep, that's what it takes. I mean, there's only so much I think data and technology can do, but in general, like you have to be very good about, you know, how you go about finding some information. From my company, you know, we, one of the things that we do is, you know, medtech companies will engage us when it comes to commercialization, right? And so we go through the same process. We use a lot of social media and internet and digital, but exact same way that we use automation. But like, for example, one robotic company we're doing work for, we're literally going and looking at the physician's website. We're looking at their social media, trying to pull as much information as possible. And you just have to be very, like, as you said, like crafty. And I think the benefit about that is if it's on a list, your competitor can buy that list, right? Exactly. But if it's not, it's really hard to find. Like, you have an edge. It just, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, if you're in a maze, right? Who wants to get to the cheese the most, right? And most of the time, you know, I think people would be surprised how lazy their competitors are.
100%. I mean, it's grit, determination, and creativity. And I pride myself in all three of those things. And, you know, that's my job. And it makes it fun. Like if it was easy and you could just get so, you know, I like challenges. That's why I do what I do. I mean, if I didn't like challenges, then I shouldn't be doing this job. I don't like when things are easy because then I get bored. So I like a challenge and I like overcoming a challenge and I like winning by overcoming a challenge. And that's what motivates me. And my entire life's been like that. So it's like, if you're just here wanting people to hand you stuff, you know,
ain't no money in easy things, right?
No, everything's earned. And, you know, I'm a father of four daughters and I always tell them, be your own maker. No one's ever going to do something for you. You know, don't rely on someone else to ever give you something, or if they don't follow up, don't just sit back and wait for them. You be your own maker. You determine your own destiny. You push. Don't ever rely on anybody.
Well, that's a great, it's a great, I'm a new father. I have a 20-month-old son, but I think, you know, developing and teaching your children how to be self-reliant and very industrious is important. So talking about the creativity side, you know, I don't know if you have one specifically, but the show, the audience loves hearing like stories and very like specific tactics. What was the most creative way that you were able to get in touch with a physician, whether or not they closed for a deal? I just want to hear of a really creative way that you found to kind of get in touch with a physician. Anything come to mind?
No, there's just so many of them. And I don't think they're ultra creative. Going into their office and finding out who their people are controlling their schedule and continually following up on that.
Can we start there? That's a very unique, underappreciated part of medical device sales. So even me, while I'm very pro leveraging social media and the internet and everything, you know, I feel like these things augment in-person selling. It doesn't completely replace it, right? So sometimes, you know, in-person selling is way more effective, you know, if you can do it. And so you walk into an office, what do you normally like to wear? What do you usually like to tell the front office staff? You know, because, you know, sometimes just the right framing will make sure that you get a meeting with a physician and the wrong framing gets you kicked out. So how do you usually like to go through an in-person visit of an office? Cold.
Yeah, well,
let's say cold.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, cool. Yeah, I usually have my, you know, shirt on and a pair of slacks, but once in a while I'll wear scrubs. It just depends on what I'm doing. But I'll go in and I'll introduce myself. I'll tell them that, you know, I'm a storyteller. So, you know, hey, we just built a robotics program in, you know, Wichita, and the program's going really good. And now we're looking to build our next one in the surrounding area. You know, who are the surgeons in your practice that treat BPH? You know, and most of the time on the website, you can find that information. So pretty much know that answer, but I want to hear it from them. And like, so they give me that. And then I will say, you know, I'd like to set up some type of meeting with them. Who controls their calendar? Like from a global perspective, who can help get, you know, combine these surgeons together in a meeting where I can come and talk to them about my technology? And it's robotic technology that gives them long-lasting symptom relief, permanent symptom relief like a TURP, but preserves sexual function. Then you're like, oh, wow. So, you know, I get that person's name, phone number, I email them, or, you know, try to stop by once in a while just to follow up. And eventually I get a meeting. I mean, it doesn't happen like that. It's sometimes it does. I mean, well, okay, well, here's a creative one. Now that I think about it, I went on a trip. This trip actually that I went on was a very defining trip for me in 2023. It made my year. And at that time I had no idea that it was going to. So I go, I have scrubs on, and there's this hospital, and the clinic is part of, in the hospital. So I go, I don't like elevators. So I take the stairs mostly, and it sometimes that pays off because I took the stairs up to the, I think it was the eighth floor, and I jumped, it dropped me right into the urology clinic. And so I started talking to these people up front, a nurse, and then the surgeon comes in, and I start talking to him, and he gets very interested in what I'm talking about. And then this lady comes in and says, hey, you're not supposed to be here. You know, you didn't check in, like you need to leave, you know? And the surgeon's like, no, I want to talk to him. He's all good. And so it's just little things like that, that trip that I made, it was two flights and about 5 hours of driving changed my entire year in just that one little moment. So you never know what you're doing is going to have that big of an impact. But if you're not going out there and doing it and trying it and getting out of your comfort zone and trying creative new things, you're never going to find out.
I completely agree. And I think that part of capital, just because of the nature of it, you know, no offense to other devices, right? But I think with other devices, you know, you can get somebody to flip in a much easier way. With capital, there's just so much involved, including the fact that, like, if a physician advocates for your technology, right, this might be the only thing that they can get for the next few years. And so it has to go. So there's just so much involved, including administration, right? You know, so there's just so much involved. So there's a lot of, I think, like expectation management as you're trying to change people's behaviors. You know,
100%. And you know, in this economy, you know, I'll meet with a surgeon. He'll say, I've been trying to get a laser for 4 years. They've never bought me a laser. They're not going to buy me a robot. And then I say, look, that's my job to work with you to get it done. I've been doing this for a very long time, but you need to trust me. If you want this, I'll work side by side with you. And I'm going to ask you to do things that are going to make you feel uncomfortable and get you out of your comfort zone. But I'm only going to ask you to do those when I need them done at a specific time. If you're willing to do that and you're willing to work with me, not me doing all the work, we can get you a robotic program here. If you're not willing to do that, then I'm going to have to move on. I'm sorry. And you have to,
I love that framing.
Yeah. You need to, I always tell people, you know, cause I've been in leadership roles in capital too. I'm a little older, as you can tell. I've ran a huge team of capital reps, and I've just been an individual contributor like I am now. But I always tell people, they aren't your friends. They are not your friends. They are your business partners. Don't sell to them on the relationship. Treat it as a business partnership. I'm here to make you have more patients in your practice, to make you a better surgeon, to give you better outcomes, to grow your practice. I'm not going to be your friend. I'm going to tell you things that you don't want to hear sometimes. I'm going to ask you to do things you don't want to do sometimes. But unless you listen to me and do that, we're not going to get anything done here. And I'm going to go with my separate ways. And I always call it getting to know as fast as you can. I want to know, get to know as fast as I can, because then I know there that I'm not needed to spend my time there and I can go on to something else.
And so your goal there is to get to a no or a yes as quickly as possible, correct?
100%. And I need to read the personality of the people I'm dealing with. I mean, it's a very complex deal. I mean, this is so complex. You have so many personalities. You have CFOs, you have CEOs, you have CNOs, you have operating directors, you have urology leads, you have, you know, surgeons, you have their practice, you have their administrators that run their practice, you have their PAs that work with them and see their patients, all these different personalities and all this different stuff that you got to put together and form this beautiful, artful puzzle at the end. And so it's very complex, but if people aren't on board and you're not continually questioning whether they're on board and make another thing I do too is I give them an assignment like, okay, I need you to email so-and-so, or I need you to register for this, or I need you to do this. And if they don't do it in the next couple of weeks, I'm done. Like, hey, you're not doing this. You said you were gonna, you're a talker, not a doer. I'm out, you know, and they'll stay in my file and I'll tickle them every now and then, but I'm not focusing the majority of my time on them. And a lot of that's huge because a lot of capital reps get, they want to convert everybody, or they go into a meeting and they hear good things and it makes them feel good. And so they keep going back, but nothing ever happens. I'm all about action. I want to see, you know, if something's going to start here, there needs to be an action point within a definitive amount of time, or I know it's not going to happen, or I have a very direct conversation with them. And one of the deals I got done this year, I had a very direct conversation with the vice president of supply chain and the person that was driving the deal for me internally. And I said, look, you guys are telling me you're getting it done and nothing ever happens. You think one person's doing it. You think the other person, it's not happening. I can't keep doing this. Like, I've been working on this deal for 8 months now. Like, I need someone to step up and take charge of it and make it happen. If not, then we won't do it. And I'll walk away and we'll try to get it another time. But I'm tired of like having the same conversations and the same outcomes every time.
What was their response to that? Because that's pretty direct.
In a week, it was done.
You know, do you think that, because I completely agree that at the end of the day, I think sales is getting people not to say things, but to take action, right? That's all it's about. And sometimes I think capital reps are afraid to rock the boat and push a deal. But, you know, I feel like if you don't do that, nothing ends up happening, because then people are not buying on your timeline. They're buying on their timeline.
Yep.
You know,
and there's ways to do it where you can build a good, positive relationship with the customer. And there's ways you can do it where you get what you want, but you've destroyed the relationship. And
right.
So I pride myself on doing it in the uncomfortable way, but preserving the relationship. I don't destroy a relationship to get what I want. I try to manage it so it's both. And there's a lot of capital reps with, and I won't name some companies, but they have reputations for destroying and getting what they want, and everybody hates them and doesn't want to work with them. I don't want to be like that. I want to be able to look at my clients and they trust me that I'm going to do what's needed. And when they need a little pushing, I'm going to push them, but I do it in a respectful way. It's about what they wanted, right? I've already built that relationship with them that where I can have that conversation, because it's already, you know, it's been a while. So, and you got to know who they are and kind of judge how their personalities are and how they'll accept things. So you have to be almost a psychologist as well. It's like kids.
You got to
treat them individually. You know, I have four daughters. They're all different. I got to manage them individually based on their personalities.
Yeah. And so. I think this is the unique thing. This is why me personally, I love capital sales, because it is very much like being a coach and a psychologist at the same time, because, you know, you're not technically the one going and pitching and everything. You have to talk to your clinical champion and kind of, you know, coach them, you know. And a lot of times I think a lot of capital, you know, in my opinion, a lot of junior capital reps, they make the assumption, especially if it's a senior surgeon, they're like, oh, this person's done this before. And I always tell them, like, don't make any assumptions, like blame your job and say, hey, you know, Dr. Smith, I know you've probably done this many times, but like my company mandates that I just go through this process. Do you mind if I walk through this process with you? Because, you know, this is how we, you know, manage this, but it also, you might learn, you know, some interesting things about selling. And usually doctors are pretty open to that, right?
100%.
Let me ask you this. So I personally, I think there's an art and science to finding, especially earlier on, the right clinical champions and adopters. But I feel like that's one of the easier parts, because either you have them or you don't. The parts that I think are harder, that are not very vague, and I think capital reps often overlook or underestimate until deals in jeopardy, is all the other players that are involved, from the VAC committee, supply chain, sometimes IT, etc. Who do you think is at least for your business, a common individual that gets overlooked that you say, hey, from day one, I need to figure out who that person is and start managing that deal so that way I have high pipeline velocity? Is there such a role?
No, there's not one role, but in the book Strategic Selling, I read that eons ago, and I'm a big proponent of that book. It changed I went from the, you know, orthopedic implant world, transactional world, to selling capital equipment. So they just, you know, they have economic buyer, technical buyer, user buyer, you know, and then coach. So your coach can be anybody. The best coach is the economic buyer because that's a CFO, right? But you have to find a coach within the account that can sell for you and when you're not there and help drive the deal. And every deal has to have a coach, and it could be a surgeon. It could be like this one deal I closed in Montana. It was the vice president of growth and outreach. Sometimes it's the one of the deals I did early in the year was the executive director of physicians, where she handled the physician market side for the hospital. But that coach has to have influence and respect within the organization, and they need to be able to articulate the value of your technology and be you there pretty much when you're not there. And so every deal has a coach, and you need to find who your coach are. And you need a surgeon champion first, but I mean, that's obvious. And a real surgeon champion, not some surgeon champion that won't follow through and never sends the email and, you know, just
talk about that? Because a lot of times people, mistake number one, reps think they have a deal and they don't. The second one is that they think they have a champion and they don't. What are some signs that you do not have a clinical champion?
Unwillingness to travel, to go to a lab or to see a case observation, to commit time. If you're always doing something for them and bringing it to them, they're not a champion. Okay. 9 times out of 10. All right. So action, like you talked about, the emails directly to executive leadership. Hey, most of the time, you know, we help kind of craft the email, send it out, and they send it and copy me. We connected. If they're willing to do that, they're a champion. And then when it gets tough, when it gets ugly, or it looks like things are in jeopardy, I need to have them come in and really like, hey, I need this, and this is why. I don't want my surgeon champion selling financially for me in the hospital. They need to focus on the clinical aspects, the outcomes, what it's going to do for their practice, what it's going to do for their patients, those types of things, and articulate that and how important it is. They have to be a teammate with me. They give me their cell phone. We text back and forth, and I don't abuse it. But when we need something, I let them know, or they let me know. It's just that constant communication, that rhythm, right? If you have long gaps of communication and there's no rhythm to it, then, and they're not doing action wise what you need them to do and what you've agreed to do, then you don't have a surgeon champion. You have a user, which is great, but a user doesn't drive a deal.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that knowing that distinction is super important. And again, like it, a lot of times, again, funny, as we keep going back to action, it's the things that are not said, and it's the actions that are taken and not taken that tell you everything that you need to know about a deal. And I think that a lot of times, at least for me, when I was earlier in my career, we would sit in deal reps and I'd sit in the back of the room, and, you know, I sit in a lot of these. And so I'm a third party. I have no dog in the fight. And a lot of times I'll see a rep bring up a deal like for the second or third time in a year. And I'm like, you know, I think, you know, do you feel like reps get stuck in this idea of a clinical champion where, let's say they're dealing with a really, really heavyweight surgeon, and they're like, oh, well, it's because that person's busy and everything. I don't think that's ever an excuse. Like, if somebody's bought in, they're willing to give you, like, to say, hey, either I'll travel or I'll do something. But there has to be, it's a two-way street, right?
Yeah, I mean, flip the card to yourself, right? So let's put yourself in the buyer's perspective or the surgeon's perspective. Or, you know, if you're buying something, let's say it's a car or a boat or whatever, you know, how engaged are you with that sales rep and wanting to get a deal done, right? It's the same principle. Like, you have to understand a lot of cues that are said and unsaid, and you really have to be honest with yourself. And you can't like hope that they turn into a certain champion. And, you know, if some deals you don't have one, you don't have one. It is what it is. And those are deals that I call that are in the middle of the funnel that you touch every once in so often, and eventually they'll spit out. You know, when you need to drive deals, when you need to drive your own timelines, you need to have certain champions, you know, that are going to back you up. And if you look at the metrics, like we talk about 2023, and you look at the high performers in our company at Procept, I think a commonality amongst the ones that were the high performers this year is that they drove surgeons to peer-to-peer events or labs or case observations. That in and of itself shows commitment, because they're taking time out of their day that they're at going to be making money, and they're taking that time away from their practice to go learn about a technology because they're really interested in it. And so,
yeah,
if you bring it to them, it's easy for them to show up. They're not a champion yet. You need to have them do an action that proves they're a champion. And that's what I mean by giving them assignments, giving them stuff to prove they are, right? And they don't know it, but that's what you're doing. Hey, is this guy real or is this gal real? Are they going to really do what I need them to do when the going gets tough and, you know, the CEO's dragging their feet? Because you're not going to get a deal done without that.
Let me pivot to another, like, there's a couple ominous characters in every deal. And I think the one that's the most ominous, the one that's that can kill a deal and everything that not enough people talk about is the, you know, finance or CFO of the deal, right? Talk a little bit about that. Like, you know, what are your tips to reps when it comes to how do you sell and persuade the CFO? Right. Cause that's, I feel like that's a tough one. Cause at least with CEO, you can sell on vision, the technology and everything. With CFO, this is the most, probably one of the more objective people in the organization. Cause that's literally what they're paid to do. Right. And the CFOs have only become more dogmatic and critical of different purchases. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the economic buyer. That's the coup de grace. That's the person that you need on your side approving your deal, or it's not going to happen. If you don't have the CFO on your side and bought into what you're pitching and the metrics and everything that you've delivered them, the ROI, everything else, you don't have a deal. You're done. I mean, that's just plain and simple. So you got to make sure that, you know, I have a finance major, so I'm a numbers guy. I love spreadsheets and all that stuff. So I have that mind anyways, but I'm not saying they don't care about the clinical side of it, because everybody does, but they're very cut and dry on the financial side. I mean, I had a deal that pushed from last year that should have happened, and it was basically surrounding, you know, they were in an emergency capital situation and they had to have a certain return to get emergency capital. And we were falling short of that. And it's just a very definitive line. So you have to make sure that your numbers are tight. When I'm doing a deal, I look for new incremental surgeons that aren't necessarily going to that hospital to bring into the fray. And I'll go out and I'll talk to them. Hey, we built a program over here. Would you come here and do cases? I'm always asking surgeons. And if you have that in your back pocket, they're not looking for cannibalized business. They don't want to cannibalize what they're doing. They want growth, especially in this market. So you have to bring them growth, just not cannibalizing what they're already doing. So you have to have that mindset. I got to show them that this is going to grow, and soft growth is okay. It's kind of that gray area. Well, you know, half of men 50 to 60 have BPH. Does that mean that all of them are going to come to the hospital and get Aquablation? I don't know, but that's a soft thing that we can look at. And the number of BPH diagnoses in the marketplace and how many patients are on drug therapy. And, you know, we can look at all the market dynamics of it, but in the end, you got to show that you can drive growth. And if you can't do that, you're not going to get a deal.
When you say show drive growth, I mean, do you use previous accounts or, you know, accounts that are similar to hospital? What do you specifically like to show to demonstrate that an investment in this piece of cap equipment is going to drive growth?
Yeah. So in our case, 1% of men who have BPH choose surgery. The reason why is because they don't want to trade their, you know, ability to go to the bathroom with sexual function. And so when we really kind of look at the deal, we look at, okay, how many patients are on drug therapy? How many patients are in your market that have a diagnosis code of BPH, but aren't getting treated or aren't electing to have surgery done? So those are the growth areas. And then on the incremental growth too, you can look at surgeons that may be working at a competitive hospital. And I mean, I got a deal done in my territory where I brought two surgeons over to a hospital that didn't have any urology program going. And it created a whole new market for them. So you have to use market data and also competitive surgeons to bring new volume. And sometimes hospitals will make a decision on a defensive move, meaning if the surgeon's going to leave and go somewhere else because that technology will be over there, they get the technology as a defensive move to keep the volume. But in this right. day and age, it's super hard. It's so complicated because the metrics that they use to analyze growth and all this stuff is so much more scrutinized because of the financial situation we're in. And no one wants to be that person that brings in a new technology and it doesn't do what they say it's going to do, because then they get fired. So it's a totally different market today. So the finance side of it drives it completely.
You know, for Procept, you guys are in a little bit of a different situation than, let's say, an early stage startup for that has capital. But how important is it for you, you know, and maybe this stage of Procept is not the best example, because you guys are you're a growth stage company. But earlier on, like if you were to give advice to a rep who is in a new company and they're just opening up a market, the last thing you want to do, especially in robotics or really any capital company, but specifically robotics, is sell to an account where they don't have the volume and then your utilization is low, because that can really hurt the market. How do you go about pressure testing and scrutinizing like deals like that? You know, and have you in the past seen a deal that you're like, you know, you wanted to sell to, but then you decided you're like, this is not like for my market and business, it would actually hurt me in the long run. Has that ever happened?
I mean, we've all sold programs that haven't been successful, but I mean, what we do as a company, we have a very kind of methodology behind training surgeons and making sure that they have enough patients and enough cases and things like that. But there hasn't been a deal I've walked away from. I mean, if it's a commitment. So if the hospital's committed to marketing it and doing the proper things and educating the patient population and doing the patient education events, reaching out to their referring physician network, and they do the work, it's going to work. So they really get in what they get out what they put in. So if they're not getting the return on it, they're not putting the effort in, and they're just waiting for it to happen. And that's not going to happen. They have to put the effort in.
Right. So, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there hasn't been a deal I've walked away from because I didn't think they were going to be successful, because.
Let me put it in a different way, is that like, again, picture some of the capital reps who are listening to the show right now, and they're at, let's say, a Series A company. They're just starting to contract everything. What would be your advice? What are some deals you would walk away from? So for one of them, you said like you don't have a clear clinical champion that's showing the action behaviors that are mapping to that. That's one. What are some other like red flags that you'd say, I don't think this is a good deal? You know, is there anything specific that comes to mind?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when the leadership in your meetings with them, they're very kind of aggressive and not wanting to be a true business partner, where they want to win and they want you to lose. I don't do deals like that.
I agree with you. Dive a little bit deeper. Give us like some specifics about what does that mean?
It can mean, number one, it's always basically price driven. They want everything under the sun. They want to be able to return it whenever they want. They want a clause in there that they can return it. They want this super ridiculous price. They want to, you know, super discounted on the handpiece. I mean, you can just tell that they're trying to, you know, they're going through the motions to get a deal done based on certain parameters. They're not looking to build a program. It's just buying something. And, you know, I always pride myself, and we're selling successful programs, you know, whether it's orthopedic, you know, back in the day, or neuro or BPH. This is a program. It's not just a piece of technology. There's many things, there's many facets to it. And so, I mean, I know one hospital I can think right off the top of my head that comes to mind that they don't like to work like that. They're very just antagonistic, and they cause a lot of friction. There's no good dialogue, and let's try to make this, you know, work. And those are the ones that I tend to kind of shy away from. It depends too on what's going on in my market. If I really need a system somewhere to develop a market and that's all I got to work through it somehow, some way. It just depends on where I'm at and what's needed in the marketplace. But I mean, I had a deal like that last year, and I was willing to walk away from it because it just wasn't worth my time anymore.
It makes a lot of sense. I'm wondering also from your standpoint. So, you know, we are, what is it? Almost a little over 20 years, 24 years now that like robotics has been in the market. Primary driver that is Intuitive. Have you experienced that in certain scenarios that when you bring up a robotics program that's kind of it causes this reaction from the hospital? Because, you know, a lot of times when people think of a robot, they think of Da Vinci and they think of really expensive, really high costs, like all these different things. Has that happened to you? And then how do you sort of manage around that?
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, Intuitive kind of paved the way for that. And they kind of started that. And there's a lot of hospital administrators that will look at you in that kind of jaded eye because of that, right? The way they did business and how they they're excellent at what they do. They're masters at it. But so, you know, when you bring up robotics, like, oh, great, here's another robot, right? I mean, and I've sold robots in orthopedics, I've sold robots in neuro, and I've sold robots in BPH, and they all have huge value. It's just kind of bubbling up that value and trying to show them that it does have value and it's just not another robot. You have to show that your technology brings value and changes what's current, you know, going on today. But one of the things that has always resonated with me, I met with an orthopedic surgeon a long time ago, and he said, you know, RJ, tell me a business or an industry where robots has entered and then left. And it never has. Robotics has always taken over any industry, and it's never left. It's always been perfected. And so robotics will always be in healthcare. There's going to be good robots and there's going to be bad robots, but the market will sift those out and determine which ones need to be lifted up and kept, and which programs will kind of fall by the wayside. And I mean, Intuit is a perfect example of that. They have a huge moat around their business, no competitors, and they're in every hospital pretty much in America and around the world. So they obviously provide value and do a really good job at providing value.
You know, and you know what's really interesting? I told this to somebody. I had Scott Honikins on, who's a, you know, well-known board member and investor, just the other day, and I told him this, and he, you know, he was as shocked as I was, but I want to double check right now. So right now I'm looking up Medtronic's market cap. So Medtronic, largest medical device company in the world, they got thousands of products. Their market cap is at $116 billion. Okay. So remember that number, $116 billion. Now let's look at Intuit's market cap. Intuit's market cap is at $133 billion. So almost $15, $16 billion more. And they got two products. I don't know. Like, when I see stuff that it gets me excited, because, you know, I think for a while in med tech, the idea of like surviving as a, you know, as a company that's a solo product and stuff, you have to have this suite of things, you know, has always been the thought. But like ProCept's a great example of a successful company that's robotics, and that you don't have like hundreds of products and everything. And then, you know, year to date, your stock's up about 20%+. So you guys are doing great. And so it's exciting to see this, because again, what people forget about robotics is that with Da Vinci, you take all the robots, you know, let's just say for general surgery, market penetration is like less than 5%, you know, so there's still a lot of opportunity for growth and innovation, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. And like I said, the market will determine who's going to be left and who's not going to be left, because there's a tons of robotic programs out there, or robotic systems out there, and the good ones will bubble up and they'll be rewarded. And, you know, in that vein, we will get to 1,000 installations faster than Intuitive or Mako did.
I heard about that. Super exciting. You do me a favor. I'm going to send Sham a message, but like, I want him to come on the show to talk more about that. But that's super exciting. It's a huge milestone to hit. You know,
massive. I mean, and you know, we're expecting to be standard of care in about 3 years' time. So
I think it's even more impressive though, RJ, because you guys are going to hit that milestone in today's market. We're not talking about like pre-COVID or anything. This is a tough market to be in. It's really, really tough, you know?
It's
so it's
very tough. It goes to the ability that I could sell as much as I could in 2023 in this type of a market blows me away. Like, I'm like, wow.
Those,
I didn't expect that.
Yeah. And just for my audience, for those who are new, if you're interested in you, again, this is not financial advice. I'm just a guy who has a podcast. You should not take advice from me. But if you're interested in looking at ProCept stock, their ticker is PRCT, so you can look it up and make your own decisions. Are you just kind of rounding out the episode? And thanks for coming on the show. Definitely, I want to have you back on. We had a segment called Deal Rip, where we actually had capital reps submit capital deals anonymously, and I would invite a lot of times like really well-known and former Intuitive execs on, and we would rip the deal apart and give advice to the capital reps so they can go close the deal. So hopefully I can have you on it for that. So it's a lot of fun. But just kind of a rapid fire question. So I got some questions for you. You can take as long as you want to answer them, as short as you want, but we'll roll through a few of these. First question, and you may have answered, but maybe not. Capital reps are always looking to learn and get ahead in their career and also in their skill set. What's like one or two books that you always recommend a capital rep to read?
Strategic Selling and The Challenger Sale. And that's it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I agree. Those are
two solid. Strategic Selling choices. Gives you the the foundation of how to work a capital deal. It's very textbooky, and it's just very scientific. And then Challenger Sale goes to, you know, bringing value to your customer. As capital reps, you have to create demand. No one's coming to you to say, hey, we want to buy your robot today. Can you participate in an evaluation? It teaches you to be a demand creator, challenge the way people think, and bring them new creative ideas. And I've always, you know, people have always asked me in my career, well, you know, how come you're always number one or number two? I mean, what do you do that makes you that? I'm like, I never really had an answer for them. I don't know. I just do what I do. But I read an article in the Harvard Business Review back in 2005, and it was around the Challenger Sale book. And I said, that's what I do. And I was able to finally quantify or define it. So
fantastic. Yeah. And I will recommend, actually, it's close enough. See, I pride myself and it's like a spidey sense. I know where these books are, but I recommend Matt Dixon and Ted McKenna, who wrote The Challenger. So they came out with a new book a few years ago called the Jolt Effects. This was during, okay. I think, yeah, really good one. So definitely, okay. Definitely check that out. All right. My next question to you is that in your career, you know, part of being a savvy business executive, you know, there's always growth involved. Again, you're teaching that to your children as well. What was the most painful thing somebody told you that made you change for the better?
Yeah,
that's a tough one. I always tell people you should just go with the first thing that comes to mind.
I mean, I've had some great mentors in my career. I don't think they've told me anything that was painful. I would say this, just, you know, just not being prepared when I go to a meeting or something like that and getting caught off guard. I think it is more of a painful thing for me. And, or, you know, when I look back, oh, I could have done this better. Or I could have done that better. But I've never really had someone really tell me some type of event like that. I can't think of one. So. Sorry.
No worries. And then finally, just a couple more questions for you. You know, being in capital sales, like you're always on the road, right? And so being on the road, I feel like you develop your own systems of efficiency and everything. What are some tools of the trade, things that you, when you're on the road or in capital, like you always have with you that, you know, make your life a little bit easier in capital sales?
Well, 100% my cell phone, my earbud, my computer, and then market data to where I'm going, right? I've researched it. I know where I'm going and I know why I'm going there. I'm just not going to go. I'm just not driving around, checking around my card, hoping someone wants to see me. I'm going with a purpose. So if I could say, what do I carry with me? Purpose. I carry purpose with me on every trip I go on. And I'm very efficient. I mean, I don't spend, you know, 5 days on the road. I fly a lot. I'm in and out. One day trips are usually common for me. Rarely do I have overnights. It's kind of in the territory I have as well, but I'm very focused and strategic. I know where I'm going and I know why, and I'm very efficient. And I pride myself on that. I don't waste a lot of time.
I like that. I think there's something to be said about that, even from me as an entrepreneur. And I was speaking about this with another entrepreneur like a few weeks ago. A friend of mine, he built a multi-million-dollar business, but he talks about this concept of like collapsing time. And so his thing is like, you know, let's say you're going to accomplish X, Y, Z for your business, or there's this project. It's like, well, what if somebody was going to kill you in 7 days? What would you do like to get this thing done? I think it's so important because I feel like, and again, I'm happy you mentioned this. So you have the big territory. You rarely have overnights. I think it's important for capital reps to know this, which is to have a sense of purpose as to what you're doing and where you're going to go, and to be just like in and out. Because I feel like a lot of times, like for a certain account, a capital rep will take a day, you know, a day and a half, 2 days, sometimes even 3 days. Right? Like they'll fly in the night before, the next day they'll be there, and then they'll fly out the following morning. And all that stuff compounds over time. And you know, you have like all this time that you're spent traveling when it could be you could be doing market research, selling, etc. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point because, you know, people look at, well, I did 100 flights a year and I had 100 hotel nights. Okay, great. What did you do? Like, you know, I don't care. I go out like, you know, tomorrow I'm hopping on a plane. I have a lunch meeting that's super important. Flying back that afternoon in my office. Thursday, I'm headed to Austin for a lab with a surgeon, come back Friday, but I'm in and out. I get a ton of work done in my office. I touch people all day long here. I strategize. I communicate with them. I text. I set up future appointments. And so I'm much more efficient going, coming back, getting to my home base, setting it up, going, coming back. I just don't, I'm not the guy who's going to go out there, you know, and drive around my car for three days, hopefully, you know, getting an appointment. I'm very driven that way. And if you look at, you know, my success of close percentage and timelines to close, I'm always at the top of, you know, time to close, percentage of close. And I think it's because I work very efficiently, and you have to, because you can get quagmired in this real fast.
Oh, 100%. I'm happy you mentioned that too, because I think so many reps don't know their own metrics. And sometimes you don't have the CRM for that. You know, again, a lot of people follow my show, they're early stage people, but knowing your like time to close, like you have to think about these things, you know? Yeah. And I just think, again, it's like what Peter Drucker says, like things that are not measured, they can't be managed, you know?
100%.
So
I mean, it's so true. Think about, you know, how much money you make in a year, break that down per hour. What are you going to spend your hour doing?
Totally. I have this conversation all the time with some of my family, because there's certain things that if, you know, I have like an estimated hourly rate for myself. And if anything, you know, that I need to do falls below that, I'm like, I'm hiring somebody. It's not worth my time. Sometimes exactly. You get a lot harder. Like, it's not worth my time. You know, so I'm, yeah. You know, one of those things it's funny, like, again, for the founders who are listening or small business owners, a lot of times you want to save money. I don't recommend doing your own accounting or bookkeeping, because like nope. the time and energy you're going to take just to be even mediocre at it, it is such a huge waste of time. And people forget that like your brain and energy is like a battery. You only have a certain percentage of that every single day. I'm not wasting any of that on that stuff.
No,
you know,
and my battery's strongest in the morning, like in the earlier, you know, around 2:33, my battery starts to drain pretty heavily because I'm consuming my brain power and all my stuff so much.
So yeah.
It's, you know, well, they're all at the house now, but I mean, I've always prided myself in being super efficient, and like everything I do has a purpose and I don't waste time. I mean, I used to lead people too, and I had to let a guy go one time, and he told me, yeah, RJ though, I drove 45,000 miles this year, and I'll just make up a name, Joe. I said, yeah, but Joe, I don't care if you drove 1 mile, you know, what did you accomplish with the time you spent? So it's not about hotel nights and number of flights and miles you drove. It's about, in the end, what did you bring in? And you're evaluated on the number. And so you better make sure that what you're doing is pushing that number forward. Don't, you know, a lot of people do things too to say, hey, look how busy I am. I'm managing up. Look at how busy I am. You know, they don't really care, because they're evaluating you by the number at the end of the year. So you need to do what you think is going to get you to that number in the most efficient way possible. And that's, you got to look at yourself and say, okay, yeah, I got to, you know, have everybody make sure it look like I'm super busy, but just being busy doesn't mean you're accomplishing anything.
100%. At the end of the day, people pay for a result, you know, and I tell reps this all the time, which is, you know, you can have like a result you're trying to go for. Below that, you have like objectives that'll help you get to that result. But at the end of the day, the only thing you have control of is what your daily activity is, and figuring that out as quickly as possible will start determining where you spend time and energy. And more importantly, what you start saying no to, you know?
Yeah.
So. Well,
yeah. I mean, I had one of my mentors one time tell me, I don't care if you are on the golf course every day and you're sitting by the pool, as long as you blow out your number every year like you're doing, I don't care. Right.
I'm not condoning that, but
I'm just saying.
100% on board with that. Last question to you is that, even though you're, you know, being a capital rep, it is very much a, you know, individual contributor. You're kind of like out on your own. You do have a team around you that do support. So feel free to kind of give a shout out, you know, but talk a little bit about the team that helps you accomplish some of the goals today, or not today, this past year, whether it's like your family, friends, loved ones, and even like your extended team at Procept.
Yeah. I mean, can I name individuals or?
Yeah, absolutely. Please name individuals.
Okay. I mean, well, first of all, my wife, Brooke, she knows what, like, how much of a mental midget I am sometimes, and how hard I am on myself, and how I'm always freaking out. And, you know, that's just my nature. And she's really good. She's type A too. She owns her own business, but she really kind of helps me like think clearly and just calm down, not, you know, get over yourself. You know, she's a very straight kind of talker. But I mean, my boss that I've always worked for, I've either worked for him or worked with him in leadership, and Jeff Gelman, he and I have been together for 19 years. And everywhere we've been number one, number two. He finished number one last year as far as a region of the year. This year, he finished number two behind a very successful gentleman who we all like and respect in the Southeast. And then, you know, my contracting person, Layla Taylor, I mean, I couldn't have done all this without her 100%. I mean, the way that she processes the contracts with the customer, negotiates terms and conditions, which is a huge part of this, that can kill your deal or drag it out. She's been vitally important. And then the clinical side, Thomas Lobb, my ASR, I mean, you talk about real flights and hotel nights. I think it was 185 flights and 165 hotel nights launching all our accounts that I sold, and then training surgeons and, you know, getting the handoff, pretty much the clinical handoff, handling those. And then Chris Hennessy on the reimbursement side really helps kind of give me the data that I need to build the pro forma to what the reimbursement is when I meet with the CFO. So, and then our leadership, you know, Sham and Reza, I've never worked for a company that has such a good culture. And I work for a lot of different companies, a lot of cool companies. I've never worked for a company that's had such a great culture here. And Kyle Kelch, who's our vice president of sales, he's an amazing deal maker. He's always available. He's very creative, very helpful, and very supportive of me, and lets me do what I need to do. I mean, the leadership here is just amazing. It's a great company. I'm very happy here. I'm very happy I came here to work. It's been rewarding for me, both, you know, financially, but also professionally. And I would just say, in closing, I'm just very thankful to work here. It's probably one of the best jobs in medical device. I've done a lot.
That's awesome. I love hearing that too. I mean, I really love our industry, and part of the reason why is, you know, I was in SaaS and tech for a little bit, and I came back just because I'm very proud of what we do for a living. You know, my goal is to help, you know, elevate, you know, the way we sell and market in this industry, and at a higher level, bring enough interest in it, because I think, we should, you know, I think more money should be pouring into our industry and not into just, you know, sort of random investments in tech and SaaS. No offense to them, by the way, but like, no, you know, we literally save people's lives at the end of the day.
100%. I mean, this technology is amazing. I mean, I'm very blessed to be able to do what I do. I'm very passionate about it. I love it. I'm very blessed. I mean, when I got out of college, my goal was to go to law school when I was in college, and I changed my major to finance, but, you know, I feel very blessed to be able to do what I do, and to just work with the people I get to work with. And you're spot on. I mean, there's so much technology going into this TikTok or this thing in social media. Medical device technology changes people's lives. It impacts their lives. It saves their lives. And not a lot of people can say that they work in an industry that does that.
Totally. Well, Arjun, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Before we end, you know, where can people find you? I'm guessing no TikTok handle for you.
No. Find me on LinkedIn.
Got it. So if you're listening, be sure to connect with RJ. Another episode of the State of MedTech. If you know somebody who would be a great guest for the Presence Club series, please shoot me a message or comment below, either on YouTube or Spotify. And as always, don't forget to subscribe. Every Friday, we release a solo pod. Those solo pods are usually me covering a topic. Most of the time, it's actually very specific to sales reps. So if you want to get ahead in your sales career, make sure that you click the subscribe button. That way you get notified of this episode. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib, and we'll see you all next time. Thank you for enjoying another epic episode of the State of MedTech. If you're feeling inspired and love this episode, do us a favor, hit that subscribe button and turn notifications on so you never miss an episode. And be sure to give us 5 stars and write a short review, because that helps more people discover this amazing community of ours. If you're a company who has a executive that you'd like to be on the show, or perhaps you want to sponsor one of the episodes, shoot us an email at hello@khatibandco.com. Take care. See you next time.